Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin, Fiat and Rock'n'Roll, your weekly dive into the world where traditional finance meets blockchain. I'm your host, Michael Blaschke, and today we're exploring a frontier in the DeFi space, the next generation of AI-enabled decentralized finance, and how it's creating hyper-customized crypto yields. We're fortunate to have with us Matthias Wyss, the CEO of Obligate, a Swiss-regulated tokenization platform that's been making waves with over 62 million in issuance volume and an impressive 1,100% year-over-year revenue growth since launching in late 2023. Matthias brings a wealth of experience from his previous roles, including scaling a spatial computing project from 8 to 60 employees, serving on the executive board of a Swiss fintech, and working in commodity trading at a tier one investment bank. He's also academically accomplished with master's degrees from both Oxford and ETH Zurich. Matthias, welcome to the show. It's great to have someone with your unique background spanning traditional finance, technology, and now DeFi.
Hi, Vishal. Very happy to be here.
Super cool. Before we dive into the technical aspects, I'm curious about your personal journey. You've moved from traditional finance to the crypto space. What sparked that transition for you? Was there a specific moment when you realized blockchain technology would be your focus?
Yeah, it's a good question. So as you mentioned in the introduction, I started my career on the trading floor for an investment bank in London on the commodity derivative side, so already doing structured products back then at the beginning of my career, and then decided to go off and do an MBA at the University of Oxford in 2013, which is actually the first time I came across Bitcoin and met the Winklevoss brothers and Mike Novogratz, who was just setting up Galaxy. And actually, I started then looking into it so much that I wrote a master thesis on how to design a risk model for managing Bitcoin derivatives. So this is something that I've been sort of looking into for many, many years now. I then decided not to pursue it further, but just stay a keen, let's say, investor on the sidelines. I didn't invest in 2013. I started investing in 2016 when sort of the first ICOs came up, etc. But I never actually, it took a while for me to sort of take a plunge full time into the topic. I was a keen observer building financial technology for wealth managers for a fintech in Switzerland. And then in 2021, I had that first opportunity that I came across to actually then step into a startup that was focusing on building a decentralized metaverse. And that was sort of a very exciting time to be around crypto in 2021, around, you know, an emerging technology like virtual reality, VR, combined with blockchain technology. And I was like, okay, this is really cool. Remember telling my wife, we just had our first child, like, okay, I could just continue working for banks and wealth managers and make good money and be a bit bored, or do something really, really exciting. And exciting it was. And, you know, once you go down the rabbit hole in Web3, I think, like so many of us, it's hard to get out again. It's too exciting and too much adrenaline to get bored.
Yeah, one interesting observation is that, like I did, you also tipped your toe into the metaverse space. I did so at my previous employer, Etikani, which back then, the metaverse was pretty interesting for our clients. You did so too in your first venture before your current crypto venture. What is your today's thinking about metaverse? Was it just a overhyped idea with no substance, or do you see any value in it, and that the way we as humans should interact with computers has to change?
Yeah, I think it's exactly that. I mean, and it will, right? We're seeing that already. And it's always a definition of what is the metaverse, right? I guess it was that terminology was strongly influenced by Meta, and it was basically like the whole part of the rebranding from Facebook to Meta. For example, it's interesting that you introduced me as a former CEO of a spatial computing company,
venture,
because that's the term, of course, that Apple chose, and they never never use the term metaverse for their products, right? So whilst the term metaverse is maybe dead, the concept of the metaverse is more alive than ever, because I think the way we are interacting with the internet is changing fundamentally. And that's largely due to AI and large language models, right? And, you know, if you're just, you know, sometimes I go for a walk in the morning and just have a half an hour conversation about strategy or people management or some kind of personal topic with ChatGPT, right? And that's just a crazy new way of interacting with the internet. And that's the metaverse for me, right? That's just, we're living in with virtual agents day in, day out, right? And it just becomes normal. And just the device that we're using to access the internet has been the computer for very long. And for the last 10 years, it's been the phone, right? But I have, you know, two kids now, and I'm sure they will be looking at me as like a grandpa in 10 years, like, are you used to carry this weird bulky thing with you all day long and staring into a phone all day long? That must have been really inconvenient, because they're going to be accessing the internet in much more convenient ways via voice, via maybe their sunglasses, via other devices that are much more user-friendly. And that's the metaverse for me, right? And that's just, that concept is very much alive, more than ever.
Yeah, I just couldn't resist opening this side thread here for a moment, because we at the podcast, I personally, and you apparently too, investigated a topic for some chapter of our respective careers. But now let's immediately close this side thread, because today we are here for agentic AI and DeFi. So I recognized in your kind of personal background that your career path has taken you from commodity trading to leading these more innovative ventures. What's been the biggest surprise for you as a CEO in the crypto and DeFi space compared to your previous roles in traditional finance and tech?
That's a good question. I mean, I soon realized working for a large financial institution that, you know, whilst the learning curve was steep in the beginning, you're just one little puzzle piece in a very large organization. And even if you're lucky enough that your career path is not impacted by external factors that you don't have any influence over, you're just going to be like, you know, managing a team of 10 in an organization of 100,000. So your marginal impact is zero, right? Whilst, you know, in a startup, every step you do, everything you do, it has a direct impact. And that was sort of the expected part. But like, it's when you ask me about what's the most surprising part, I think it's just how much you can build in a very quick time period compared to like these very much bigger and much slower organizations. And I'm always astonished by how slow they really are and how slow things move there and the type of topics they have to deal with, whilst, you know, we're running at just like, it feels like a Ferrari pace versus, you know, my four-year-old's walking bike and compared to it. And of course, running a startup is chaotic, right? It's messy and a lot of things are moving. And I think that's sort of the thing you just have to get comfortable with. I'm a very structured and organized person. So I inherently find that difficult, but it's something you just have to put up with that, you know, a lot of things are not organized. A lot of things are not structured yet. A lot of things may not even be worth to organize and structure, because you sort of dismiss them in 3 months' time because you realize actually that's not a good way to follow. But I think you just have to constantly reflect the path you're on, and you're always super, super busy and super, super overloaded with work. But you always have to ask yourself, am I right working on the right things? Am I investing my time on the important things and the things that really make a difference long term? And no one's going to tell you, right? You just have to find it out yourself. Or the market's going to tell you by either not giving you any money or not buying your product, right? So I think that's sort of the surprising things, is like how crazy the reality really is. It probably struck me after a while, but I think it's just part of the game, and that's the fun part as well.
Yeah, I can really relate to the internal conversations or even tensions between, on the one hand, the crazy fast-moving crypto space in which there are always open loops and new dynamics, and on the other hand, a systematic structured approach to work in which you want to finish things nicely, produce high quality work, I can really assume that this creates inner conversations of, oh no, I want to close this loop first before I move on. I want to produce high quality stuff and not do something 80-20, which is in a venture in itself, in particular in the crypto space, really a challenge.
But you don't get around it. I think you just, the 80-20, I think it's, you're still good if you're at 80-20, not at 60-40. It's sort of like you have to be at 80-20 somewhere. And yeah, I think it's, being Swiss or German, we always aspire for high quality. But I think you have, if you want to be perfect all the time, you're just going to die because you're too slow.
Okay, for our listeners, for the remainder of our conversation, we follow a simple why, what, how structure. We start with the why, exploring the reasons AI-enabled DeFi matters right now and the market gap it fills. Then we'll move on to the what, breaking down the core concepts and explaining exactly what we actually understand with the term hyper-customized crypto yields and what they look like in practice. And finally, we'll tackle the how, examining the technology, business models, and regulatory considerations that make this possible. This approach or structure should give us like a comprehensive view of both the big picture potential and the practical implementation details of AI in decentralized finance. So let's jump right in. Why does this development matter? So Matthias, let's start with the big picture. We're seeing a convergence of AI and DeFi that seems to be accelerating. Why is this integration between AI and DeFi happening now? And why should our listeners care about AI-enabled DeFi?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. I mean, AI has been pretty much impacting every single vertical in our lives, right? As we just found out earlier in the conversation, right? In the past couple of years, you know, there's some areas where, you know, it's adopted much earlier. You know, 10 years ago, we were experimenting with the quant company that I was running with like recommender systems for financial products. How can you summarize news articles, etc.? It was just, the output was really bad. It didn't really work, right? And that was called machine learning or big data analytics. So it's not something completely new, but of course, the computing power and you know, the models have just become much larger and much more powerful. And this works well in a digitally native format, right? Everything that is digital and already has large data sets, AI works really well, right? Finance, on the other hand, has been sort of stuck for the past 50 years in, you know, huge digitization projects of large banks and, you know, moving from like mainframe, you know, core banking systems to like slightly more innovative things, but it's very slow, it's very outdated, it's very analog still, right? It's a lot paper-based. So why does AI not work in traditional finance? Because you just don't have the data, you don't have the underlying digital infrastructure. Whereas in DeFi is, of course, digitally native, right? And DeFi hence is sort of the perfect breeding ground for AI, especially also for AI agents. If you think about it, think about doing a KYC as an AI agent. You're not going to get through the KYC in a bank, but if you can interact in a permissionless ecosystem, an AI agent is perfectly at home in that ecosystem. So I think that's sort of the fundamental reason. So we needed to upgrade the underlying infrastructure into the digital age first, the financial infrastructure, for AI to really make sense. And now we're at this point, and we're at the point where we not only have, you know, the underlying digital infrastructure to do payments with like stable coins or speculative investments like cryptocurrencies, but we can also have the underlying digital infrastructure for securities and investment products, right? And that's what we've been building at Obligate for the last 5-6 years, is the underlying infrastructure to actually issue digitally native real securities like equities, bonds, and investment products. And once you have that, then actually you can do very powerful things with AI on top.
So Matthias, if I get you right, as for the why now, we're at a perfect conversion point of these two technologies being AI and blockchain. AI has become not just powerful, but also abundant and easy to implement. What I see is that tools and APIs that would have required specialized machine learning teams just 2 years ago are now simply available off the shelf. And simultaneously, blockchain infrastructure has evolved too. Platforms like Solana have solved many of the scalability challenges that would have made this computationally intensive AI integration expensive or even slow just a few years ago. So when you combine accessible AI with scalable blockchains, you create really the foundation for this new generation of DeFi. Did I capture your why now correctly?
Absolutely. And I think for mentioning Solana is a good point, right? So in general, these DeFi ecosystems have, you know, been around since, you know, 2016, really, when smart contracts came about. And then, you know, in 2021, really the DeFi summer, right, where like more financialization happened on the blockchain, right? But with Solana, what we've seen is really this scalable issuance of new tokens, right? Which, you know, as always in crypto, it starts on sort of like the crazy speculative end with meme coins, etc. But these like speculative bubbles, from a macroeconomic perspective, they have actually a very good purpose of attracting innovation, right? And attracting talent that experiments with it. And that really proved for us the scalability of that infrastructure. And what we were looking for is an ecosystem where we can issue at scale financial products on the blockchain, right? And that's why we chose Solana, because Solana allows you to issue at very low cost points, right? They're very low transaction cost tokens, which can not only be meme coins, but also, you know, very interesting financial products. And thanks to that mass, you know, scale, you can make them very tailored and scalable, right? So you can actually do mass customization and you can basically build your personalized financial product with a few clicks and an AI agent that helps you doing this for $100 to starting at $100, right? Which is unthinkable in the current financial ecosystem, where in traditional financial infrastructure, these kind of products are only available to very wealthy people who have invested at least $100K into a single product. Right. So now you're all of a sudden opening up access to institutional grade quality financial products for basically everyone out there who has access to a wallet.
All right. I think with that, we well covered the question of why this convergence is happening now and why it matters now. I think even of higher relevance is the question of why this development matters at all. So either for our listeners or for humankind in general, why is it important that we merge DeFi with AI? What do you think?
I mean, it's always, you know, a question why for the human race such technologies are relevant, right? I mean, technology has always been a key driver of, you know, economic growth, right? So, you know, I'm a macroeconomist by training, right? So that's what you learn in Macro 101, that, you know, technological innovation drives in the end the efficiency gains, which drive economic growth. And, you know, in the end, it's all about that, right? It's about how do we make our lives better by becoming more wealthy, you know, more abundant, and having a broader percentage of the population having access to these tools, right? And it's like the iPhone being, you know, more and more accessible, even though the price point is still very high, especially with tariffs, I guess. It's about making these kind of solutions available to the broader audience. And, you know, it's a very overused term, but it's in the end really democratizing access to financial products, right? Because you can make things that were exclusive to institutions first or very wealthy individuals available to everyone, right? And why should, if we have the tech for it, why should we not make it available to everyone? And the second layer, so there's basically the infrastructure layer, right, that makes this now very accessible, very cost efficient. Then just the sophistication layer, you have like these institutional products, like highly financial engineered products that are now accessible with mass customization. And then there's the service layer. And the service layer for these kind of financial products has always been very important, right? So such type of products were only available in, you know, wealth managers, private banks that would have, you know, high intensity of advisory services on top to their clients. Whereas, of course, this is where AI is very good as well, right? Like servicing someone in a very highly automated fashion as if you were talking to a human. And one innovation that we came about is our AI bartender, who basically advises you how to mix your own financial products, right? And this is, of course, like a fun application of this. But in the end, it's very fundamental because basically anyone out there can get, you know, good quality financial advice in terms of how to allocate, how to invest, etc., how to create products, and which was so far very much dependent whether you had enough money and access to a good, you know, private bank.
Yeah, so the why you outline is really about democratizing sophisticated yield strategies previously only accessible to professional investors or institutional investors. And second, the user experience in DeFi that so far still needs dramatic improvement. I mean, for DeFi, you really need to be a blockchain nerd, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's very much the case. I mean, there's the usability, like there's the entry hurdle into DeFi, which I think is getting easier and easier with like Revolut. You know, you can have, you know, crypto directly on the fingertip on in your app, or Coinbase, obviously just doing an excellent job in terms of like creating a very simple user-friendly app and access point into crypto. But then there's also the sort of the educational piece, which is not just like, hey, how do I use a wallet? But it's like, what's out there? Like, how do I bridge from X to Y and like, you know, swap there and lend and borrow there? And it's like, that's really just for the 1% nerds out there. And we're really trying to capture the other 99% long tail, the normies out there, which, you know, have no experience, but are excited about it, want to learn about it. And that's really what you... where AI can really drive that part in a very scalable way, right? To educate people, to have a chatbot that you can interact with and learn about DeFi and how to best invest.
Yeah, most protocols really require significant technical knowledge and multiple complicated steps. And here AI can abstract away this complexity, which makes DeFi then really accessible to people who aren't blockchain experts and who neither have the time and or the willingness to expose themselves to this complexity. So it's really cool that AI can help abstract away complexity, and it can help democratize sophisticated yield strategies. So my observation is that DeFi has so far offered relatively simple, if not even one size fits all, yield opportunities. And what's AI enabling now is, let's call it, sophisticated, customized yields, even for small batch sizes, something that was previously impossible in DeFi. Can you maybe give an example here of how AI specifically bridges that gap, of how AI enables sophisticated, customized yields, even for small batch sizes?
Yeah, I think we need to like decompose it into two components. So you don't need AI to create a tailored financial product. We built a solution that, you know, helps you do that with three clicks, like quite intuitively already, if you know what you're after, right? But that's a question, if you know what you're after, right? So the 99% long tail out there probably don't even know what they're after. So that's where AI can help advising the client. So that's service layer for me. That's one layer, basically saying, okay, look, what are you looking for? Low risk, medium risk, high risk, like have that in a conversational chatbot, find out what, you know, exposure you're interested in, etc. So that's one AI layer, the service layer, right? Where it could just help advise the client better in configuring the product, in finding out the product. The underlying infrastructure, that per se doesn't require AI. That's really blockchain, legal tech infrastructure and financial technology, really, to enable you to customize these products at very low batch size. So that's what we've been building for many, many years. And then there's a second element where AI can help, is basically in the automated management of these products. So that's almost like we go into down the rails of asset management. So that's basically your BlackRock, but you have your own BlackRock at your fingertips, right? So basically, you can design your own ETF, your own, you know, strategy, and an AI agent is going to run it in the background for you. And that's actually the latest innovation that we're looking at. We call them agentic stablecoins. So it's basically you just have a dollar denominated strategy, and it just runs in the background very sophisticated strategies, but like it's very simple user experience. You just hold a token. You don't need to even interact with it. So it's I think it's a convergence of two things. So it's a private banking like sophisticated service layer, the advisory layer, where AI can help with chatbots, with LLMs, which are very easy to use and explain and help you configure certain products. And on the other end, in the back end, agentic workflows can help you run the whole system, sign transactions on your behalf, run reinvestment strategies, etc., in a fully automated fashion. And that's actually what we've been seeing in, let's say, whole asset and wealth management in the last couple of years as well, is this convergence of the two, like, you know, Fidelity and Schwab, etc., entering the wealth management market with direct-to-consumer products as well. And basically, this convergence between private wealth and institutional asset management is basically going into one, also largely due to AI.
Yeah, and the development you outlined really matters because it creates a more efficient market, I think. Traditionally, you could either have highly customized financial products if you were a professional investor with millions to deploy, or you could accept generic products with small investments. And if I got you right, AI bridges that gap. Yeah, that's really fascinating. And that was a good example, yeah. What I also observed is that the DeFi space has evolved dramatically since 2020, but adoption has faced challenges beyond the crypto native audience, if you will. So do you think AI could really now be the catalyst that finally bridges that gap for broad retail adoption, but also for institutional adoption of DeFi?
Yeah, I think well, the institutional adoption we have seen really in the last 12 months, right? We have seen two vectors happening in institutional adoption in decentralized finance. One is the ETFs, right? Crypto ETFs, you know, being approved by the SEC and then making that accessible to larger institutional asset managers. But then the more interesting bit has been, for me, the tokenization of real world assets by large financial institutions such as BlackRock, such as Franklin Templeton, etc., and making real world assets accessible to DeFi users, right? And, you know, now with Kraken announcing that they're going to tokenize all types of securities, right? This is like just going out the risk curve, right? So you start with money market, right? Then you go to stocks and bonds, then you go to other types of products. And what we're doing is just more sophisticated financial products, right? So this is exactly the space we're in. I think this per se doesn't need AI. Again, this is basically infrastructure. This is basically where, like, what products do you have available? But then I think AI will, of course, help, first of all, the users navigate this space, right? And in the end, it's also like, do the users really care in the end if, you know, that security that they're buying runs on a decentralized ledger or on a centralized ledger? I think in the end, that's just a protocol level. I think we need to, as an industry, get to a point where the user doesn't even see it. And I always compare it to like the early days of the internet, where people were on the protocol layer of like HTML websites or SMTP email protocols, and the nerds were cared about this. But 99% of the users then just now use the dApps on top, right? They use Snapchat, Instagram, Facebook, right? It's like, who cares what protocol is underneath, right? As long as the user experience is good, right? And adds value. And I think that's where I'm sure we're going to get to with, you know, decentralized finance, and probably AI will help on that journey as well. But I think the whole financial infrastructure on the back end needs to upgrade, and that's the path that's happening right now. And then the user is just going to use their, you know, Robinhood app. He's going to use their Revolut app, and whether the stock is, you know, in a CSD traditional format or just on Solana, the user is not going to care. It just needs to be 24/7 real-time good experience.
So what you just outlined is institutional players offering tokenized assets in the DeFi space. Do you observe any institutional adoption of the DeFi space and that institutional players seek to create yield in DeFi?
Yes, we see that too as well, right? So we have next to Margarita Finance, we also have a private credit marketplace, which is bonds which natively live on the blockchain. And we have institutional players that come and access these kind of marketplaces to get access to type of yields that they otherwise couldn't get to. And these are also like real world companies and yields from real world companies that normally would just act in, let's say, the private credit type of sector, where it's very hard to get like individual exposure to companies because, you know, the public credit sector is just a hurdle, access hurdle is very high, even higher to financial products, to be like 100 million to issue a bond on a public market. And thanks to the same tech, you can lower that, right? And that's how you get actually traditional financial user adoption for DeFi products, right? Because you make things accessible that normally aren't accessible to them. And that just gives diversification, different risks, and makes your portfolio and your Sharpe ratios better.
Yeah, I think AI here really provides the opportunity that we now move beyond crypto native audiences, be it crypto native retail investors or institutional investors. And for institutional investors, not only to place their products or their tokenized assets in the DeFi space, but really seek yield in it with AI as a layer on top that navigates through the complex DeFi space. Okay, probably one last thing I've observed is that yields in traditional finance have finally become more attractive again after years of near zero interest rates. And how does this changing macroeconomic environment affect the value proposition of these AI customized crypto yields? So is this kind of higher interest rates like a competitor for you in that retail investors are no longer interested in crypto yields as now the traditional finance offers good yields again? Or is that an effect you don't observe?
I think that it's just too early. Like the space is so nascent still that, you know, this people were already excited when they got like sort of yields, like money market yields in USDC, right? That was an adoption only happened last year, right? Where people piled into like yield-bearing stable coins. It's like, ah, actually, I'm not just holding USDC. It actually earns something. And then users were used to like maybe staking yields, single digit, maybe Solana a bit higher than Ethereum, etc. But again, like very low yields. And on the other hand, you had like very crazy sort of yield farming strategies which is really only for sophisticated users out there. And even most of those lose money because they're being the 200% APY is paid in some token that probably loses all it's worth 3 days later, right? So that's not really, a long-term strategy either. And I think what we're seeing is that sort of the whole middle bit, anything between the single digits and the triple digits, is underserved. There's not a lot of offering out there. And I think the more adoption we get is just the more users you will have that are using, looking for different things, right? As you said, it's not one size fits all, right? And so far, DeFi has been very much one size fits all. And we're just offering alternatives with our products. And I think that's just so early still that I don't think just because Fed funds rate are now 4% instead of 2%, that doesn't drive a large competition. I think, of course, once, you know, Fed rates go down again further, it makes alternatives more attractive. But still, I think, you know, there's just not a lot out there in DeFi right now. That's what we're like trying to improve.
Yeah, thank you, Matthias. I think with that, the why and the why now have become pretty clear. It's about hyper-customizing yield strategies. It's about an improved user experience. And we look at this topic right now because now the convergence of AI and DeFi makes sense, are technically possible. And with that, I suggest we move on to what AI-enabled DeFi actually entails. So let's break down what we mean by AI-enabled DeFi actually for our audience. Could you explain the core concept and how it differs from traditional DeFi protocols?
So what is AI-enabled DeFi? It's really like what we discussed a bit in the beginning, right? It's sort of helping the user navigate this complex space with a service layer on top that helps you better understand what you're actually buying, better understand the risks and the returns, and better understand, helps you navigate and actually customize these products for you. And on the other hand, it's sort of under the hood as well. It's where you can have an AI asset manager, right? And have, you know, your own BlackRock at your fingertips, where basically the end-to-end execution, rebalancing, all the complex stuff is like an agentic workflow. So I think it's basically these two elements converging. And that's what makes this interesting. And it makes it also much more accessible to then, you know, not just the pros out there and the maxis, the DeFi maxis out there. It's basically, it makes it accessible for everyone, for the casual user of DeFi that just wants to, you know, get a good product. And in the end, again, the opportunity or the next best alternative for the user is just traditional financial products, right? And and then, you know, the users are going to decide between the two. And typically, the good traditional financial products have much higher access hurdle, right? And that's what I think this combination of AI and DeFi can really lower.
You mentioned hyper-customized both in your response. So hyper-customized crypto yields. You mentioned it both in your work at Obligate and in your response right now. What exactly is being hyper-customized, or how does it look in practice? So are we talking about risk profiles, the duration, the underlying asset, or something else entirely, or the whole set of these parameters?
It's exactly the whole set of all of them. So yeah, to be very specific, right? I mean, I know when we talk about these products, it always sounds very generic, but let's make a very specific example, right? So let's say you hold Bitcoin and you love that asset, and it's just, you know, broken the next all-time high. But with some part of it, you'd love to like earn some yield, right? And earning yield on Bitcoin has traditionally not been an easy thing, right? Because there's no smart contracts out there, there's no staking for it, etc. So how do you go about this? What institutions have been doing for a very long time is a very simple strategy called a cover call strategy. What is a cover call strategy? It's basically you're selling an option to buy your Bitcoin to someone else at a much higher price. So let's say Bitcoin is 110,000 right now, and you're selling an option to someone to buy your Bitcoin at a strike price of 150,000 if it ever reaches that in the next 3 months, right? So if you're today willing to sell at 150 for 3 months, someone's going to pay you an option premium for that today. So that actually is a yield that you can earn today just for giving someone else the right to buy your Bitcoin in the future if it ever reaches that level. If it doesn't reach that level, then you're not going to, let's say, sell your Bitcoin. So wrapping this, so this can actually generate very attractive yields, double-digit yields. And of course, let's say the yield gets higher, the lower you go with that price, right? With a price where you sell your Bitcoin. So if you give someone the option to buy your Bitcoin at 115 in the next 3 months, the yield is going to be much higher. So basically, that's the risk you're running, that you're missing the upside move, right? That you have to sell at 115 if it goes to 130 or 140 or 150 in the next 3 months. So this type of strategy has been utilized by so many, you know, hedge funds, crypto foundations, institutions, but you need to interact with sophisticated market makers. You need to know what risk margining is, variation margin, margin calls, etc. And we basically wrap that into a very simple end user product where you don't need to know anything about this. All you need to parameterize is how much yield are you looking for, and we tell you where your risk level is. So that's exactly what the product is, the so-called yield boosters that we have built with Margarita Finance. And this type of product you can do starting at $100, and you need to know three things. What crypto asset do you want to have exposure to? Bitcoin, Ethereum, or Solana. What yield you're looking for, what APY, and over what time period, what lockup period are you looking to do that, from 1 day to 3 months? And that's the three parameters, and off you go. You have your fully fledged financial product, which is legally fully enforceable as well in the real world. That's very important at the fingertip for just, you know, $100 investment size.
And how do you gather these data points, or how do you parameterize this data? So how do you calculate the risk profile? How can a customer choose the underlying asset? So do you have like a Margarita app in which you go through a questionnaire? Hey, do you want to do it for your Bitcoin? In which you have questions for defining the risk profile and so on?
So we did that in a very, very simple DeFi style UI. So you just go to app.margarita.finance and you will be able to connect your wallet. Currently, it's for onboarded users. So we need to KYC you. And then you can basically have a UI. You enter three things. What is the yield? And for how long do you want to lock it up? And then off you go. And we have a very intuitive, let's say, pricing where you see real time, you get a price, a tradable price. And we explain to you what are the two scenarios you're going to end up with. Either you're going to get your Bitcoin back and your yield, or you're going to sell at, let's say, 150,000 or whatever the price is then, and you're still going to get the yield, right? Basically, very intuitive. Under the hood, you can look under the hood. We're fully transparently showing you the full legal documentation, the term sheets, the fact sheets, everything, if you're interested in it, but you don't have to. Like, it's abstracted away for it. But what's important is, if even that is too complicated for you, the three parameters, then, as I mentioned at the outset, you can use our AI bartender and you can just ask him, hey, what do you have to offer today? Mix something up for me. And then you have basically a conversational element, like your ChatGPT for financial products, that designs your personalized financial product for you based on, you know, whatever conversation and inputs you had or prompts you had.
So I'm also curious about the data aspect. I think we cannot talk about the usage of AI in general, or in particular in DeFi, without covering data. There is no effective usage of AI technology without meaningful data. So what kind of data is being analyzed by your bartender or in your AI systems to create these customized yield strategies? Or is that exactly your secret sauce that you would never uncover here?
No, look, I mean, in the end, it's two layers, right? So you have in our layer, that's sort of the service layer. It's actually really understanding sort of just, it's the language model. That's the data that's required, right? It's basically understanding, inferring from the inputs, the prompts that the user gives, sort of like, hey, what is a good financial product that serves sort of this input prompt? And this is actually, let's face it, this is not the crazy part of AI. I think where it gets interesting is when you have then agentic workflows on the back end, when you have entire investment strategies. So not just one-off products, not just a one-off one-week yield product, but actually a continuous strategy run by agentic workflows. And I think that's just a high degree of automation and that you're getting there. And in the end, the financial product, I think how it's engineered is very much traditional financial engineering, right? It's really about Black-Scholes pricing the risk of the underlying implied volatility and the market moves. And it's a market maker on the other end that has a very sophisticated risk warehousing where they can in real time accept orders for that kind of, very small batch size.
All right. So let me attempt of summarizing what AI-enabled DeFi actually entails now that we deep dived into hyper-customization, into the usage of data. So to me, an AI-enabled DeFi represents like a fundamental evolution beyond traditional DeFi protocols by leveraging AI to then create these personalized financial products and experiences. And so for me, The first core concept is hyper-customization of yield. So it's moving beyond one-size-fits-all DeFi offerings to these tailored yield strategies based on individual risk preferences, time horizons, financial goals, and even for smaller or very small investments, amounts of, let's say, 5 Swiss francs or even lower.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect summary. I mean, this is exactly where we're going to get to. We're not quite at 5 Swiss francs yet. We're at $100, but I think already that is amazing, right? That if you compare it to the traditional financial ecosystems where it's hundreds of thousands of dollars that you need. And, you know, with Solana being very efficient, I mean, it's still gas fees that you pay because there's smart contracts that run, you know, sophisticated algorithms. So that costs a bit of gas fees, but like it's still, you know, nothing compared to like, you know, what you will pay for buying a off-the-shelf ETF with your traditional bank, which is probably that amount in fees, not in investments, right? You lose 100 francs just buying an investment ETF. And for with us, you pay like, I don't know, a minimum amount of fees for having $100 directly invested.
And probably a second part is when it comes to gathering these constituents of what AI-enabled DeFi is then the data-driven decision-making. So if I got you right, the AI systems you deploy analyze on-chain data and traditional finance data to optimize the yield strategies, to identify arbitrage opportunities, and to manage risks in ways that would be impossible for human traders or impossible outside of DeFi.
Yeah, I think that's where we're going to get to absolutely with what we call our agentic stablecoin. So what we have now with Margarita Finance is any user can customize very easily thanks to AI's user experience enhancement their own financial product. But then, of course, not many users are sophisticated enough to run these products on a continuous basis, lock it up for 3 days, then decide after 3 days again how to reinvest, etc. So when you think about automated portfolio management, so, you know, investing over time, not just one-off, but over time, that's when these sort of agentic workflows become very powerful. And that's exactly what we're building now in a stablecoin format. And why stablecoin format? Because that, in the end, makes it accessible to a permissionless user base. So of course our platform is AML regulated. We currently only accept qualified investors, so they have to go through a KYC AML procedure onboarding. But once we then go into the stablecoin, that stablecoin representing the underlying strategy can then be listed on a DEX on the secondary market, and it's backed by the assets of the underlying assets. So if you want to redeem, you can always go and KYC and AML check yourself and redeem your underlying share of that strategy. But if you can just hold it, and the value is going to appreciate according to the yield that the strategy generates. And that's where it gets very interesting, where you can then employ AI signals. We even have on the roadmap to have some neuroscientific signals as well, behavioral financial signals with a partner that's been working with AI and neuroscientific analysis for a long time. That's something where it's going to get very interesting because you have that agentic workflow, and then it's just like getting better and better signals, right? In the end, it's always two things that you need for a good investment strategy: the underlying infrastructure and then good signals.
So what you're saying is that this kind of data-driven decision making, in which on-chain and traditional financial data are analyzed to optimize the yield strategies, in which arbitrage opportunities identified, that's a part, a defining characteristic of AI-enabled DeFi. And it is on your roadmap. So with your stablecoin, you seek to get to this more data-driven Absolutely. Decision-making.
Absolutely. And the stablecoin is currently in the sort of pre-marketing phase. We're looking to launch it at the end of Q2. And that will then enable access to a much broader user base as well to such type of institutional yield. So currently we bring it to DeFi, but to KYC users. But of course in DeFi, the aspiration is to have really this fully permissionless user experience where you just connect the wallet, buy the token, off you go. But that token is just not any token. It's a very smart token because it's offering you institutional grade yields.
Yeah, and to conclude my summary of the what section, I would add as a defining characteristic the enhanced user experience. So it's abstracting away technical complexity through AI interfaces that make sophisticated DeFi strategies accessible to non-technical users. So to me, that's like now an inherent part of what AI-enabled DeFi is. I think it's this agentic component, agentic AI, that makes it just fun and easy to access. Would you agree with that third component? 100%.
I think that's sort of, and I think it's fun when you have it sort of in the background. You don't even need to deal with it, right? It's sort of, it's doing it in your own behalf. And, you know, we just had a webinar last week with a lot of our early supporters and community. And they were like, so actually I could just let this run and not worry about it. This is really cool. And they were really excited about it because, let's face it, we're all busy. We all have so much to do. And yeah, there's always the 1% nerds that love to do that themselves and then dig into it. But the long tail of the 99%, they just want something good that works and that they don't have to worry. They can trust and don't have to worry about.
I think what underscores that there is something to this shift is that the podcast Bankless has introduced a dedicated thread, if you will, of pods about agentic AI. So, I mean, Bankless has from the outset reported about blockchain and crypto, and they just added a whole another series on agentic AI in crypto and DeFi, which underscores that it's not just a side topic, it's now a main thread of the crypto conversation. And the shift is really from relatively simple, manually configured DeFi protocols to now more intelligent systems that can adapt to market conditions and user needs in real time, that potentially even bridge the sophistication gap between traditional finance and crypto. So I think in this section now, we really nicely understood what is actually behind AI-enabled DeFi. And for me, it's really this shift from relatively simple to sophisticated intelligent systems that can adapt to market conditions and user needs in real time.
100%.
Okay, with that, let's move on to our third section. How is it actually being implemented? Now, let's get into the how. Could you walk us through the technology stack that enables AI-powered DeFi? What are the key components that make this possible?
Yeah, it's a very good question to decompose the tech stack. And I think it's actually a quite complex tech stack, because I always say it's financial technology, you know, with this type of like sophisticated products resting on a lot of legal tech, which I think is one of our key differentiators, that we're not just yet another DeFi protocol. These are legally fully valid contracts that just happen to be on the blockchain. And then thirdly, it's the blockchain tech layer, right? Which just, they run on the blockchain because it makes them more efficient and more accessible. But then you have your fourth layer, which is basically the agentic layer, right? So it's basically four layers of tech on top of each other, which is this full stack solution, which then comes across neatly with just, you know, your AI bartender. It sounds kind of fun, but it's a lot of sophistication under the hood. And in a very, you know, macro sense, how our solution is built.
When I think about complexity in technology, I always think about, is the complexity justified? So would you say this four-layered, more complex technology stack is needed, is justified to produce the value proposition you have in mind, or would you prefer to have it simpler, or do you see simpler ways of doing it, or is that just the level of complexity it takes to use AI?
I think it's exactly what you want to have, right? What you want to have and what is actually required. Because think about it, the blockchain layer, sort of, if you've abstracted to the very simple thing, it makes things cheaper and faster, right? You can do it for $100, and you can issue that product in 5 seconds. In the traditional financial world, it's for 100,000 and it takes T plus 2 settlement at the minimum, typically T plus 10 for new debt securities, right? So it's like you wait 10 days, 10 business days to actually get your, you know, financial product booked into your portfolio. So that's sort of like something that just is a must-have. Like people today don't accept to wait 10 days again for something they purchased, right? Digitally. Then the legal tech layer, I think that just makes it sound and trustable, right? Because you know you're not just buying any random coin or whatever, pooling into some kind of vault strategy, some money. It's basically you're like interacting with counterparties, very sophisticated market makers based on a legally enforceable valid contract that happens to live on the blockchain. And then you have the financial engineering layer, where you basically have these type of sophisticated financial products that actually enable these institutional yields, right? Like thanks to them, you can actually do these kind of strategies and you do your customized risk profile. So that per se is sort of our alpha version. And then we added the AI layer just to make it simpler to use. That's then all about the UX, right? The AI layer, abstracting away the complexity, just talking to a chatbot, right? So I think it's actually the bare minimum you need. But the beauty about Web3 is, of course, the composability, right? We didn't reinvent this all from scratch, right? A lot of it is proprietary tech, but the LLM layers, etc., that's actually the easiest bit to build, in fact, actually, if you look at time and effort, because this is all so composable. And once you have solved the underlying infrastructure from analog to digital age, right, for financial products, then the AI layer is actually the much easier bit.
Yeah, so the technology stack you outlined is really about integrating a blockchain infrastructure, particularly scalable networks like Solana, the one you chose, with the AI and machine learning models. Then there are, I would assume, data pipelines for on-chain analytics.
Yeah.
If it's part, it has to be part. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like oracles are very important, right? For you know, options and derivatives, you need to have a very clear price observation of the underlying asset. We use the Pith Oracle for that, that determines whether, you know, your call option at 150,000 is in the money or out of the monies, or are you actually getting the payoff or not, right? Very important that 1 cent difference can make a difference, right? It's a sort of binary, so you're not going to have a very good on-chain price observation source, and we're using Pith for that.
Yeah, and ultimately you have the front-end interfaces then that make then the more complex strategies really accessible and abstract away the complexity. Yeah, so yeah, a technology stack has to be as complex as the requirements needed to be. And I think your explanation really made clear that you just need all these layers. And yeah, that certainly this stack is part of your secret sauce. And it cannot simply be copied. Yeah. So I think this is a precious frontier work you're doing. As navigating such a technology stack is certainly not easy.
Absolutely.
So at Obligate, I think you've achieved significant issuance volume and growth. But doesn't growth also come with technical challenges? I'm thinking of scalability challenges. So did you face, when implementing AI capabilities in your tokenization platform, did you face technical challenges, in particular when scaling it?
Yes, I mean, as any startup, like you try something, it works, and then you try more of it, and then you see where it breaks, right? That's just, and then you iterate and improve, right? And of course, we've had that as well as any growing company, and it's also important not to try to make everything scalable from outset, because otherwise you just end up building for hours and hours and hours. Without knowing whether there's even a market, right? So I think the scaling and breaking is actually a good thing. I'm positively surprised how little has broken. So we've had a large number of deals settled over our platform. We've issued to very large institutions private credit products. We've issued credit from very large institutions as well, and have gone through intense due diligence, of course, once you start dealing with the bigger players, right? They want their audits and their due diligence, and it's very much in depth. It's not just pure Web3. It's really Web3 meets big institutions. The AI layer is actually, I mean, AI is all abundant, right? Like, it's basically in our product, but we also try to use AI within our company as much as we can, and try to use more and more, right? Because of course it can make our processes a lot more efficient as well. I mean, being just simply things like transcribing all the meetings and creating automated CRM entries based off that when you talk to clients, and automated notes, etc., to then more sophisticated like agentic workflows that we're currently looking at as well. It's the full range, right? And I think it's just amazing how AI can help you also scale quicker as a startup now, right? Like, can just do a lot of stuff for you, like building a landing page. We've done our latest landing page in 3 days by someone who didn't have any, you know, website coding experience. And it's a very good website. And things like that is just crazy, right? That were unthinkable even 2-3 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. So when I investigated the project during the preparation, I assumed typical technical challenges would be blockchain performance limitations, the model accuracy with limited historical data. I mean, on-chain data is at max for Bitcoin like 14 years old. So we have limited historical data, and maintaining the security while introducing all these new computational layers. So are these challenges, I assume, true, or didn't they just materialize for you?
So I think the blockchain scalability were, you know, on relatively efficient infrastructure. So we've one stack on you know, EVM layer twos, and the other one on Solana, of course. And, you know, the scalability of that is fine. I think it's more sort of the user experience, which, you know, we're, as you mentioned in the beginning, day in, day out is just sometimes really hard. Like, you know, you then are a different layer two. People have their USDC on Ethereum mainnet, and then you have the bridging, and it's just like a lot of like operations still dealing from, especially with TradFi players, right? Because then they need to on and off ramp, and like these things are not so scalable yet, the operations around it. The limited historical data, I mean, as I said, right, we don't do asset management as of yet, right? We basically offer customizable financial products, which are priced based on implied volatility. So like the cover call example that I had before, there, of course, we deal with a sophisticated market maker on the back end. They decompose this option into their main risk drivers, the Delta, the Gamma, the Vegas, and actually go and hedge themselves on their end on Deribit and then like option trading platforms, right? So that's always forward-looking risk, right? Once we get into like the agentic stablecoin side, of course, then it's all about like historical data, about stress testing your strategies, optimizing them over time. And this is sort of a new field that we're entering, and we're also partnering with specialists in that area.
Yeah, I think the implementation approach you outlined is not only multifaceted, but also just super interesting to me as a technologist. So I really enjoy it. And the approach you outlined demonstrates to me how AI-enabled DeFi requires not just technological innovation, which here, of course, is blockchain and AI, but it also requires careful consideration of business viability, of regulatory compliance, of alignment with blockchain's core principles, because building a business on top of blockchain must, to some extent, be entirely different than building a business in the TradFi space. And what you outlined about the how really made that clear, yeah, that it's not easy. Okay, yeah, with that, we've covered the why, the what, and the how of, yeah, you run a AI-enabled DeFi business. Yeah, with that, I leave the word to you to address any topics I missed that are super important for your business or for AI-enabled DeFi. So is there anything that we missed?
No, I think we covered it quite well. I mean, maybe as a final point, of course, the part you mentioned about regulation, of course, that's one of our key let's say, USPs to be in a fully regulated space. And you know, we have some of the best, you know, blockchain regulatory experts in Europe on our team. That landscape is, of course, a difficult one to navigate because it's fast changing as well. And what we're seeing in the US is very interesting, right? With the new administration, you know, the Genius Act and things like that, things are changing very, very fast, right? So you cannot, you're in a dynamic environment, right? You always have to assume things change quickly and you cannot really take extremely long-term decisions. And I think that's something like I realized as well, the definition of what long-term means in the Web3 startup has to probably be redefined when you come from traditional finance. Long-term is probably more like the 12 to 18 months horizon, whereas medium-term is like 3 to 12 months, right? And anything beyond 18 months is just so hard to predict, right? With so many factors like tech innovation, but then also regulatory changing landscapes, user preferences, changing all dynamically, interacting. So you have to just stay very agile, reflect continuously in terms of your product market fit, in terms of your you know, user persona, and you know, just also in terms of your business model. You just got to stay agile.
Yeah, your reference to the States makes it easy for me to recommend or refer to another episode we recently published about the policy differences between the US and Europe, in particular when it comes to stablecoins. So do check out the show notes for this particular episode. And then I am looking forward to seeing Obligate market entry in the United States, if not accessible there anyway already. And at latest, that point in time would be another excellent opportunity to invite Matthias back to our podcast. With that, let me thank you for your precious time, Matthias. And yeah, that's all for today's episode of Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock'n'Roll. If you enjoyed our conversation with Matthias Wiss about the next generation of AI-enabled DeFi, please subscribe, leave a review, and share with friends and colleagues interested in the future of finance and technology. Yeah, and next week we'll be diving into another super interesting topic at the intersection of TradFi and blockchain. Until then, keep exploring the intersection of exactly these two and keep listening to Bitcoin, Fiat, and Rock'n'Roll. Thank you so much. Thank you, Matthias. See you soon.
Thanks, Michael.
The views expressed are solely the personal opinions of the hosts and are provided for informational purposes only. This podcast does not offer financial or investment advice. Always conduct your own research and make well-informed decisions before investing. Please be aware that the hosts and guests may hold cryptocurrencies or digital assets discussed in this episode.